George Zimmerman's lawyer has created a new website along with Facebook and Twitter accounts to answer the public's questions about his client's case, and there are a lot of questions. For our next guest, one of them is, why is a child dead? Rich Benjamin is African-American himself, but he says the answer to his question is not racism. To say so is to reduce the shooting. He says the more accurate answer is gated communities. A child is dead because of gated communities, which Rich says exacerbate biased treatment against the young, the colored, and people presumed to be poor. Of course, Trayvon Martin was shot by George Zimmerman in the gated retreat at Twin Lakes in Sanford, Florida. Rich Benjamin is a senior fellow at DEMOS, a nonpartisan research center, also author of Searching for Whitopia, An Improbable Journey to the Heart of White America. And he joins us now. Rich, welcome.
Thanks, Robin. Glad to be here.
And you come by your opinions firsthand. You lived in gated communities to research your book. Tell us about that.
I did, Robin. Between 2007 and 2009, I just embarked a 27,000-mile journey to the whitest communities in America. And in so doing, I lived and rented houses in gated communities. I interviewed residents. I looked at the marketing and the development of such communities.
Well, and you say they champion a bunker mentality. How so?
Well, many of the residents of these communities expressed a fear of crime that was exaggerated to the actual crime threat, even as reported by their own police departments. And I'll never forget, in St. George, Utah, for example, a woman wrote an essay called Arm Yourselves Against an Us Versus Them World. And I just thought that that really captured the spirit of the bunker mentality in many of these gated communities.
What you're saying is that they find like-minded people and they seem to exponentially increase the fears, even if, as you say, the police blotters show there's no reason for that fear. And by the way, here you are, a black man making this journey. Did you feel welcomed?
On a social level, I did. But in residential gated communities with home ownership association, unless you're a homeowner, you're often not welcome. And so that points to the Trayvon Martin case, where it's not just a function of skin color. It's all these other dynamics, such as renters versus owners, young versus old, outsiders versus quote-unquote insiders.
Right. Others agree with you on this. Edward Blakely is author of Fortress America. He says gated communities shrink the notion of civil engagement. But let's get to the most provocative thing that you say, which is that the thinking inside a gated community might have contributed to George Zimmerman's act.
Absolutely. Robin, in 2005, I was mugged by a black teenager, an armed black teenager. In my wildest dreams, I could not imagine having shot that black teenager. Now here George Zimmerman is, having shot an unarmed black teenager who never confronted him in the first place. It was George Zimmerman who initiated the first contact. So that just baffled me, and I got to thinking, what is the mentality behind that? And I very much do believe it is a gated community bunker mentality. And another baffling point to me, Robin, is once the Sanford Police Department arrived on the scene, here they have a 17-year-old corpse and a living person who owned a gun. And yet they tested the corpse, the 17-year-old corpse, for drugs and alcohol and not the living person with a gun. I mean, what gives? Clearly, a bunch of assumptions were made on George Zimmerman's part about who is, quote-unquote, entitled to be there. And clearly assumptions were made on the police department's part.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because, first of all, some might say, was it the gated community that created this thinking on the part of George Zimmerman? Attack first, ask questions later. Or did George Zimmerman find a gated community that fit his need to police? I mean, you don't know, you know, cause and effect there. But also, the police must have known that this particular gated community, the retreat at Twin Lakes, is integrated. Something like 20% of the residents are black, another 20% are Hispanic. And we're reading in the Daily Beast that there had been 8 burglaries, very frightening ones, a 21-year-old woman in a house with her child when 2 men came in, for instance. Neighbors say that several of these burglaries in the last 14 months involved young black men. So, you know, you're talking about a bunker mentality that sort of feeds on itself. They would say it's a bunker mentality that was feeding on reality.
Well, it's interesting you point that out. You were asking me about cause and effect. Was George Zimmerman perpetrating this bunker mentality of paranoia, or did a bunker mentality of paranoia in a gated community attract him? I think they go hand in glove, and I think they feed each other, and such that people no longer rely on the proper public enforcement of crime in these communities, and then therefore they get a do-it-yourself notion of justice that George Zimmerman obviously tried to exercise.
Well, this is your other point, that it's a country ever more enamored with private ownership, private decision-making around policing.
It is, and we've seen an uptick of privatizing our criminal justice system, from law enforcement, i.e. private cops, to private prisons, to private even probation officers. And one of the things that fascinated me, Robin, is that people uncovered a memo from a corporation that stood to gain from the building of more prisons, and they were encouraging both the Bush and the Obama administrations to enforce illegal immigration more strictly, knowing that that would bump up the numbers of the imprisoned. And so private corporations, when they're involved in the criminal justice system, are accountable not to democracy, not to justice, but to the bottom line, i.e. their shareholders. And that's the problem. And to me, like, I can't say enough that when you have this private enforcement of these gated communities, who's watching the watchdogs? In other words, who's making sure that these people are properly trained, that these people have a sense of civic duty?
Derek Jackson, who writes a column for the Boston Globe, is also African-American, also wrote about going inside a gated community. He and his wife were driving to Dafuski Island in South Carolina, but they had to go through the gated Hilton Head first. And at the gate, there was a guard with a handgun on his hip and a machine gun slung over his shoulder, a machine gun. Outside a neighborhood, even though, as Derek writes, the Charlotte Observer quoted the county police chief saying there was no difference in crime between the gated and the non-gated communities. But as you write, you know, the people who are selling these homes are appealing to people's fears by some of the language they use.
Yes. And by the way, Robin, after I published this piece, one of the most poignant emails I got was someone who spent 12 years marketing gated communities as an employee of a big developer. And, you know, he was chuckling, but he said you hit the nail on the head, and that's how these communities are marketing. And if you look at the literature, all the things they call themselves.
Euphemisms like master planned community, secluded, intimate neighborhood. But why was it poignant? Did he regret his role in selling some of these?
Well, it was poignant because he said, I had done this for 12 years, and it never occurred to me the bigger picture of how these communities play in, and more importantly, how their marketing affects and draws residents.
Rich Benjamin, we'll link you to his op-ed, The Gated Community Mentality, at hereandnow.org. Rich, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.
So, do you live in a gated community and maybe object to this idea that you have a bunker mentality, or have you visited one and felt it? We'd love to hear from you at hereandnow.org. Meanwhile, up next, a design student who says, gated or not, poor design contributed to Trayvon Martin's death. That's in 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at mathworks.com.
Welcome back, or if you've just joined us, we've been talking about gated communities. Between 2001 and 2009, the U.S. saw 53% growth in housing units in these gated communities, and our look at them is prompted by author Rich Benjamin, who says the bunker mentality inside gated communities contributed to Trayvon Martin's death. Columnist Derek Jackson also writes about a culture of fear in gated communities. He quotes a University of Wisconsin-Green Bay professor who says, people call it bulwarking. A resident drives up to a minimum wage person at the gate, then drives into a garage, shuts the door, turns off the alarm that they had on all day, closes the door, and it doesn't indicate people are less fearful, meaning all these gates don't make people feel safer. And our next guest asks, did bad neighborhood design doom Trayvon Martin, whether or not in a gated community? Zach Youngerman is a graduate student at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He writes in an op-ed in the Boston Globe that the layout of the Sanford, Florida gated community where Trayvon Martin died may have also had something to do with how he died. Zach, welcome.
Thank you.
And you remind us immediately in your piece of something George Zimmerman said to dispatchers that struck a chord with you. What was that? Mm-hmm.
He said that there was someone who he thought was suspicious, and he was walking around and looking about. His walking signaled to Zimmerman that this was someone who wasn't supposed to be here, and that maybe he was looking around because it wasn't immediately clear how he should get from where he was to where his house was on foot.
Yeah, two thoughts there. Just the very fact that someone was walking made them suspicious, and then the idea that it's hard to walk in this community. Let's do that one first. Why?
Sure.
Because you describe the community. Why is it hard to walk?
It's hard to walk because in a lot of areas, there aren't sidewalks on the side of roads.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people are saying, yeah, and, you know, because a lot of communities are like that. But here, for instance, in Boston, Cambridge, you know, where we are, there's sidewalks everywhere. It would be sort of inconceivable that you wouldn't have a sidewalk.
Right. Unless everyone that you thought would be living there had a car, which is true in a lot of America and certainly in Florida and in this community in Florida.
In fact, you write that less than 1.2% of the population in Sanford walks to work and that the subdivision is designed for driving. And that brought up another observation for you. Driveways often replace what?
Front doors and porches and a more human-oriented interface with the street.
Because people sit on porches and they watch what's going on.
Sure. And instead you have a situation where the houses are really oriented towards the back. Maybe the kitchen is in the back. And the what would be a front yard or parts of a front yard have a couple of cars in them.
And so you had the stat about how many people in Sanford walk, very few. But we looked up national averages. Now here in Boston, as we said, we're sidewalks all over the place. We have the highest percentage of people who walk to work. That's 13%.
Yeah, Boston does very well.
Yeah, but nationally, only 2.5% of Americans walk to work.
Yeah, it's very low. The other point is that people may be taking public transit to work. And in dense areas where maybe it's a very short walk to their transit stop, and from there they take a bus or a train, and we know that light rail, for instance, was kiboshed in Florida. They didn't think that that was a good investment of transportation funds.
Right. You say another question is, what if we design places differently, places for people? You mentioned front porches rather than driveways. How else would you do this?
Protected sidewalk is very easy. Street lighting that is oriented towards pedestrians rather than, say, a 50-foot-high street light, which is really about providing visibility to drivers.
There's a clubhouse at Retreat at Twin Lakes, but you say what?
I say that it would be an ideal opportunity to put in some very small retail, something that maybe Martin or Zimmerman would have gone to that night and crossed paths with each other. And there are examples in other developments. Pine Hills in Plymouth is a great example of an exclusive, very ideal community, but that also has retail. There's a grocery store there. There's mixed use. And what you're really designing for is the experience on the street.
The experience on the street, the idea that, well, as you quote a preeminent urbanist, Jane Jacobs, who describes it as eyes on the street, people who are sitting on their porch and seeing what's going on, or just passing each other. I mean, you say if George Zimmerman wasn't getting in his car to go to Target, all the way to Target, and Trayvon Martin wasn't feeling he had to go all the way outside this community to buy a bag of Skittles, they might have just passed at a grocery store. You're nodding, yeah.
And part of the idea of the eyes on the street is that you have different types of users on the street at different times. So a restaurant, which might be open in the evening, would have people there. Certain activities that occur during the day versus at night mean that it's always populated in some way. And so part of the idea of safety is that there are other people who can enforce norms of behavior and whom we can look to say, hey, is something going on here that seems out of the ordinary? Or maybe if there are other people around, I check in with them. So
right.
I'm not the only one making a decision about whether someone is suspicious or not.
And instead what we had were two people all alone in a full residential community. Well, you know, after your op-ed in the Boston Globe, George Metzger wrote, and he said, you know, these ingredients that you're listing, porches and things, are also present in neighborhoods abandoned by white flight. You know, he says it's maybe distracting for planners to peddle well-designed public space, even if it's important, as the elixir for a societal evil that we choose not to confront head on. In other words, it's racism, and no porches, no sidewalks are going to change that.
I think there are certainly elements that have to do with segregation and justice and equality. But when you have porches and a walkable neighborhood, you begin to have interactions and you begin to have familiarity with people. You see people who are different from you racially or by age.
The design forces people to recognize each other.
Exactly. Certainly walking is a sort of equalizer as yeah. well. And when we're stuck in our cars, there's a defense put up in a way that I think there isn't when we're walking around.
That's Zach Youngerman, a grad student at MIT here in Massachusetts, on his thoughts about neighborhood design after the Trayvon Martin shooting. Zach, thanks so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
So a University of Florida professor says bad design, gated communities, shrink civic responsibility. Again, we love your thoughts at hereandnow.org. Latest news is next.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. The Harvard Art Museums, from Chinese jades to Jasper Johns, Byzantium to Bernini. Learn more at harvardartmuseums.org. And by the Institute of Contemporary Art Boston, with Figuring Color, exploring the expressive power of color in paintings and sculpture, icaboston.org.